Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, we look back on the July 11th storm. Next Tuesday marks 1 year since heavy rains washed out major highways in northern Wisconsin, claimed several lives, and caused more than $35 million in damage across eight counties and one tribe. Robert Blanchard is chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. The reservation was among the areas hardest hit by the storm. The Bad River swelled to record levels, flooding U.S. Highway 2, homes, and the tribe's powwow grounds. Blanchard sat down with me yesterday to talk about the flood and how the tribe is still recovering from the damage.
That morning I came to work and I could see where the flooding was affected. Highway 2 over here washed it out at Enemy Creek, and that portion of the highway was shut down. And the water was still rising, so we got about 12 inches or so of rain in a short period of time. So we had some major flooding throughout the New Odena area here and along Bad River and Old Odena, where there was quite a few homes that had been affected. Even up here in New Odena, where this community was moved from Old Odena years ago up to here to get away from the flooding.
Really?
Yes.
When did that happen?
No, that had to be in the late 60s maybe. I was young then, I can barely remember that, but I remember when they started building the homes up here, and it was just a few of them, and then they just started getting bigger and bigger as and then people started moving up here from Old Odena. There used to be a number of homes down in Old Odena. There's only a few left now, but it was like a little city down there, too. And anyway, that morning I got to work. We were notified that the river is going to be rising swiftly and that the dam up on White River was going to be opened, or if it wasn't opened already, which added to our problem down here. So we set up a command post here in this building, and then we lost power here, so we had to move over to the casino into our convention center area, where we had backup generators, and we operated out of there. And by that afternoon, I couldn't get home. I was stuck up here for 3 or 4 days, so I couldn't get back to my home. And a lot of people were stranded either on one side or the other, couldn't get home or couldn't get to work or whatever. So we declared a state of emergency, and we had FEMA came in. We called other tribes, another tribe, to assist us with the emergency management part of it, which was the Menominee tribe. And they were very helpful in getting us organized, you know, so that things started happening in steps rather than the, I'm going to call it, organized chaos that we did have, you know, because it was, everything happened so fast. And then one of the biggest things I remember is we had some elders and some people that needed health care that were on dialysis and had some other problems that need to be taken care of. And we couldn't get them to the hospital in Ashland, which is only 10 miles away. And if we took the long route, it would be almost a 10-hour drive around to get back to Ashland. The fire chief got the helicopter out of Ashland. The National Guard helicopter was in Ashland because the governor was flying over that day, and that's what he was flying in. He got them to come and airlift them out to get the help they needed, which was a big load off us, because we spent a whole day just trying to figure out how to get that completed, and we didn't know what we're going to do. And that was one of our immediate concerns. And then, of course, trying to get out to the areas that people were stranded. We had trucks going into houses that, you know, you couldn't access to pick up, to get the people out. And it was a whole community pulled together and worked together. And we had assistance from a lot of the other tribes in Wisconsin, in actually tri-state area, Michigan, Minnesota, that donated to us. We had a fund set up to assist, which we used to house the people that were displaced in our lodge. And it was just good to see that when you need something like that, that people do come together, no matter what may happen before, everything's put aside.
I mean, how has it been just in the last year trying to take care of everything?
Well, we're still recovering from it somewhat. Our roads took a big hit. We had over $5 million worth of damage on our roads, and we're still working at that. We still got places out there that are not passable yet because of washouts. We have a number of homes that have been affected. Those are being taken care of through imminent threat grants and stuff like that through our housing. So people are getting the help that they desperately need to make their home livable again because of the mold and all that kind of stuff that forms once something gets wet. And so we want to make sure that they have safe living conditions.
So is everyone back in their homes, or are they in different homes still?
I think we have a couple that are living in off the reservation due to their home being flooded, that they can't. The home is actually gone right now. So they had moved to Ashland to temporary housing. And I think we had about 10 homes that were damaged or deemed unlivable. The government road bridge, that was washed out, and one end of it was the abutment, the approach to the bridge was washed out. So that was one of the major things that we had to take care of right away, because we had people living on either side of that couldn't get to the store to get what they needed and stuff like that, you know. And if there was an emergency, we couldn't get to them. So we had to take care of that right away, and that took some time to get it completed. But we had another tribe, Lac-Ta Flambeau tribe, came in with some of their equipment and helped our crew and get that repaired. And I have to commend them people for doing what they did in such a short period of time. You know, they had that road, got it so they can get back and forth across, you know. And right now it's I think it's better than it was.
So do you feel like if this were to happen again, that the tribe would be better prepared?
Something of that magnitude, I don't know that there is, you know, being 100% prepared, but I hope we are better prepared. I know we're looking at getting a better emergency management in place that could handle it. Like I said before, we called in Menominee tribe, and they have an emergency management team there that came up and helped us. We need something like that here to be able to manage and help us make the decisions to what needs to really be done, what's the immediate.
Are there other changes that you've made too in the last year?
Well, I think now that we're getting on a better road to our recovery, that I think that we have to start looking at that kind of stuff, you know. What are we going to do different? And how are we going to deal with something like this again, should it happen? Hopefully it never happens again.
So what would you like to see happen then, so that you could do everything that needs to be done? What would help you to be able to do that?
Well, you know, there's so much red tape involved when it comes to FEMA and the state and stuff like that. In a time such as what we had, just trying to cut through some of that red tape to get to the things that we need and get it to the people that need it. You know, I think that's a big thing that we need to look at. You know, how can we streamline that, you know, to get the help to where it needs to be and to the people it needs to get to.
You mean like with housing? Or?
With housing and just to access a lot of the services that even the state could offer us, you know. We went through FEMA, and for example, our roads, when we went through FEMA, we would have had to put up, I think it was 25%. So if we had $5 million in damages, you know, that's over $1 million that we'd have to kick in. So we accessed emergency relief for federally owned roads because all our roads are on the Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs road system. We were able to access those funds, which is, there's no match for the track. So we're able to get those roads fixed without any cost.
And this whole guardrail washed away, and then much of this walking trail.
That's Ed Kolujewski with the Bad River Tribe. We're on the bridge by Denimy Creek. It was one of the areas on U.S. Highway 2 that experienced significant damage last year.
The bridge was still there, all the riprap on both sides, that was flushed away, and the eastbound side of the highway was washed away with cracks kind of going on the other side.
1 year later, there are a few signs of the damage left behind, but on tribal roads, the remains of debris and twisted culverts line the ditches and banks of the Potato River and Vaughn Creek. Ashland County Highway Commissioner Emmer Shields says no one could have understood the magnitude of the damage until the morning after the storm.
It was in bands. The devastation was in bands. The center of it was down in the towns of Marengo, towns of Ashland, and then up in a band all the way up into Iron County and down into Bayfield County.
So when did you begin to realize how bad it was?
Well, I actually was home, and I was called in the middle of the night, and my patrol superintendent had been out, and I guess he decided not to wake me, not that there was anything I could really do, and he finally called to tell me, you know, just how serious it was and what was happening. And then I started making my way in to work, and found out I couldn't get to work, because basically everything was gone. All the roads were out. And I mean out, pretty much where the culverts used to be was just a big hole in the road. There was nothing there. One of the unique things that happened here was that the culverts basically disappeared. We actually found some of them a quarter mile away from where they were at originally. So they had just basically been blown out and driven downstream. And this isn't just, we're not just talking about 24-inch diameter pipes, we're talking about 8-foot diameter pipes in many cases. So it was an unbelievable event. We finally managed to start patching a route together that morning between between like Marengo, little village of Marengo, and Mellon. We found a way to get through with the help of some locals on four-wheelers. We were able to scout out a tentative route. In other words, places where the road were, there was enough left of the road that we could just put a pipe in and maybe get across it. And I think the route we had that first day was like about 8 miles to go about 2 miles. That's how long the route was. And in many places, the route was like one lane wide. You know, that was about it. So we basically had a situation in this county where you couldn't go east and you couldn't go south. And of course, there's nothing to the north because we have the lake. So the only way you could go was west, and then you had to go west about as far as Superior to be able to go south again. So that was what we were facing. There wasn't a situation where like we could just say, well, just, you know, stay off Ashland County roads and use Bayfield roads or something like that, because they were all, they had a big problem as well.
You had a couple of huge washouts too on 13.
Right.
And one was near High Bridge, and then where was the other one?
The other one was up by North York. One was was on a stream called Trout Brook, and the other one was on Silver Creek. And Trout Brook was probably about 40 feet deep, and that was completely gone. It was two very large concrete box culverts, one of which was tossed around like a rag doll and was still there, but was completely out of the location it had been in. And then the one on Silver Creek, the box culvert was about the only thing that survived that event. And we had about a 50-foot or 60-foot deep hole there, but the box was still in the bottom of the creek. And probably about 50, 60,000 yards of material were missing from that location. So they ended up building a bridge over both the locations because it was just a massive undertaking to bring fill back in to fix it.
Trying to organize all these routes and then deal with the damage, what was that like?
Well, it was a bit of a nightmare, but it was just a matter of just not giving up. I mean, one of the things that you just had to remember is that if you took baby steps, you know, at least you're going in the right direction. We did things that we would never, ever do in a normal event or a normal problem like this. I mean, we backfilled over a culvert at one location that was now flowing the wrong way. The pipe had been bounced around so much that it was still in place, but it was actually sloped the wrong way. And I told our people, I said, doesn't matter, just fill over the top of it. We'll come back later and we'll try to make it work. But the idea was just to get across. And there was many things like that that we had to do. I mean, we had traffic going down one-lane roads. We had roads that were pretty much unsafe, but we had no choice. We had to go down them because we just didn't have the time or the ability to do anything with them at that point. And you mentioned the word triage before, and that's kind of what we were doing. We were just trying to find a road that would work and not worry about what it looked like or how badly damaged it was or what, you know, long-term plan was for repairing it. We just needed to get something that worked. So the first day or two was just really basically just try to survive the thing and then try to get things in order enough where we could kind of come up with a plan on what was to be done. We had people that were landlocked or basically were on an island. I shouldn't say landlocked. They were on islands because the roads that they lived on the end of were gone in every direction, so they had no way out. We had to talk to the town's town officials and the public and try to find out, where there might be people with special needs or, special considerations that had to be made for people that were in those types of situations, and we had to set up priorities on what we were going to fix. And the realization kind of arrived at an early time there is that we were in a long slog. It wasn't going to be, be an overnight fix, or it wasn't going to be something that was going to be easy. And it wasn't, but I think overall, I think we did a pretty good job, for the cards we were dealt. People don't realize there isn't a stockpile of like 8-foot diameter pipe laying around Ashland County. We had to order pipe from, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, places like that, and had to be trucked here. And we had, in a lot of cases, we had good help from some of the manufacturers and that went out of their way to get us pipe. And yet it still took sometimes weeks to get, to get the pipe that we needed. So
now that it's like 1 year later, how far along is everything? I mean, would you consider it back to day before the flood, or is it still a ways to go?
No, we're still got a ways to go. We've got, actually we're working on a couple projects right now for a town. It was one of those, or two of those sites that were just really, really deep, large scale, large scale cut. And last fall, we just basically had to give up on them. It was like we could take care of, you know, 10, 15 of the more average pipes, or we could spend the rest of our construction season trying to work on one of those. So we had to give up on a couple of them. And that's what we're doing. We're going back and working on those. I'd say we're at about 90% or a little better. And we should be, by the end of this year, we should be back to normal. Should also mention that we actually took a little bit of a hit this spring, too. We thought we'd all maybe get a year off from flooding, but we ended up with another pretty serious flood this spring in the areas around Mellon and Glidden. And we did have some damage from that flood. And so we had actually some more flood damage claims being made this spring.
So are you doing work down there right now due to that?
We have done some work down there, and we've done some work, you know, in the central part of the county, too, around the Mellon area, doing repairs and getting things back together. We probably lost, you know, probably a couple of weeks of our construction season because of that. We're fortunate. It wasn't real bad, but still, you know, it took some time away from us that we could be working on the final restoration of the earlier flood.
How many cases were you putting back what you had or improving on it?
Well, when you design a pipe, you design it for a certain storm. And basically, engineers, what they do is they say, okay, this is a 50-year event, and you call it a 50-year storm, or this is a 100-year event. And probably in most cases, highway culverts are probably designed to maybe like 50 to 100 year status. Most of the pipes that we replaced, we actually put back, in at least in the county roads, we put back the ones that were already there, pretty much the same size, because you can't design for a 500 year or 1,000 year storm. You can't do it. I mean, the road's going to go out. I don't know if there's a pipe big enough. You'd have to put a bridge over every crossing. And a lot of the town roads, we did put larger pipes in, because what we did is we would look at that, see what their design standards that they use, which were quite often unknown. And so we would size the pipe according to like a 50-year to 100-year storm and then put that size pipe back in. So there was actually upgrades on a lot of those roads. Now, which should be able to handle a fairly sizable event, not a 500 year or 1,000 year storm. There's nothing we can do on that one. So that's kind of where we're at. So, you know, we should be in good shape for quite a few years, because you don't have too many of these 50, 100 year events. So.
But you're kind of worried about the next one?
Yeah, we are, because I've been on this job about 30 years, and I think I've been through 10 to a dozen 100-year storms. The scientists or climatologists or whatever are now looking at their graphs and their calculations, because they believe that at least in northern Wisconsin here, we're off by a magnitude of 30 or 40% at least. So we've been upsizing our pipes a little bit for a long time now. And I mean, for example, I sized a pipe one time, and actually was getting a little criticism as it seemed so big, until the next spring when it was just barely handling what came through there. And then I felt kind of odd, because I'm thinking, well, maybe I didn't size it large enough, you know, because it shouldn't be doing that soon. But that's the problem. We're having these big events now, and sometimes they're localized. It's not the whole county is getting it. It's just like, you know, maybe 20, 30 square miles of the county is getting a 100-year storm, and it seems to be happening all the time. It's far more, you know, the occurrence is quite often, and definitely not every 100 years. I mean, it's coming much more rapidly than that.
Well, and when you think about, like, responding to events like that, mm-hmm. with all the different agencies, is it working? Like, the response, is it working, or is there stuff that you would like to see happen to improve that, whether it's the local, state, or federal government?
Well, I think for the most part, I think the counties and local governments, I think, you know, they work pretty good to it together. I think the counties are usually in a better shape to help the towns because they have more equipment and a little bit more manpower. There was some mutual aid type work done where other counties that weren't as badly affected came up and helped us, and that was very helpful. The thing that's very difficult in the early stages of that whole disaster is actually wondering who's going to pay for all this, because for example, if a county is working for themselves, that's fine, but when a county goes to help and render aid for a township or something like that, we don't know if we're going to ever get paid. We just do it and hope that, you know, everything will work out and we'll be paid for the work we do. Because you know, there's no agreements. It's just basically on a handshake and an understanding that, you know, we just got to get this done and you move forward. And in this particular case, it became a FEMA FEMA declaration pretty early, so we knew that the feds were going to come in and assist us with this particular storm. But there was, you know, a few weeks where we didn't know, you know, if we had a funding source or if the county and the towns were just, you know, on the hook for these repairs, and whether anything would be forthcoming or not, it was questionable. So, you know, the county also worked, we also do the maintenance for the state, so we also had state roads that we were working on too, and actually the state actually had to bring in either other counties or contractors in some cases to do some state work because we were so over our capacity, you know.
Yeah, how many people do you have?
We only have 16 people, counting myself. So that's it. That's our whole crew.
And if you guys didn't have to sleep, it'd be fine, right?
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of people missed a lot of sleep. I mean, I have to hand it to our crew because they really did a yeoman's job for quite a few weeks in a row. And I can't say enough about that. I mean, everybody really, really worked hard there was just maximum effort put out to try to accomplish these things and get people back to their normal lives, you might say. And I also say about the people, you know, the people in Ashland County were very good. I mean, I really didn't hear any complaints. I think everybody understood how bad it was. I think that they were, for the most part, they were very, very pleased when we, you know, took care of their particular situation or something. But I didn't hear a lot of negativity about it at all. I mean, and quite the contrary, they seemed very good and very patient, you know. And they did a lot of nice things for us. I mean, we had people delivered water to our crew. I mean, we had even some people that delivered meals to our crew, and treats and snacks and all kinds of things. So it was great. It was really great.
So is there anything that you would like to see in the future that could help the next go around?
I hope we never see another, I hope I never see another 500 or 1,000 year storm. I think that, you know, on the emergency preparedness, I think that there might be some things we could do to just have better agreements between agencies and a better plan as far as, you know, who's going to do what and where the responsibilities are and that sort of thing. I think maybe for the first few days we kind of floundered around a little bit trying to figure out, you know, who was going to take care of what. And that was, you know, you got multiple layers of government here. We got state, county, and town, municipal. And there was a little bit of a floundering trying to, you know, get a handle on where we go for assistance, what we should be asking for, what are the priority needs, we finally, you know, it all worked out. But I think maybe some more preparedness in that area, just to kind of really get a handle on, you know, what each entity can do and who they go to for help, that type of thing. So I think that overall it went fairly well, but, you know, looking back, there's also things that could have gone better.
Shields says the recovery process is still ongoing. Now that the bulk of the work is done, local governments are waiting to get reimbursed by FEMA. 1 year later, those payments are just starting to trickle in. But Shields says some towns, including the towns of Marengo and Ashland, still haven't been paid. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we head down to Saxon Harbor and hear from bar and restaurant owner Grace Hines about the effect the flood has had on business and efforts to rebuild around $10 million in damage to the marina and campground. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, we're taking a look back at the July 11th storm. Next Tuesday marks 1 year since heavy rains washed out major highways in northern Wisconsin, claimed several lives, and caused more than $35 million in damage across eight counties and one tribe. Saxon Harbor in Iron County was one of the areas hardest hit by the storm. The marina and campground there experienced at least $10 million in damage. Grace Hines and her husband Bill own the Harbor Lights Bar and Restaurant at Saxon Harbor. She sat down with me yesterday to talk about the recovery and what their plans are while the rebuilding process is ongoing.
The work that was actually done down here was done last fall, you know, shortly after the event, of course. After all of the safety issues were taken care of, we had already had the National Guard here. They came in and took care of most of the trees and the rubbish that was piled on top of everything. I don't know what we'd have done without them. They really, really did a wonderful job. And then the guys from Ironwood, the North Country, people were contracted to come in and do the final cleanup, and they did a wonderful job too. They really did. It made a big difference. At least we weren't looking at all the docks that were ruined and all of this stuff anymore. And it just it helped the attitude, but that was really where it ended. I mean, then the highway department came in and they talked with the forestry about where they were going to put that temporary bridge, and it got put in September. So that's where basically that was the biggest thing, is to link Highway A with the folks that live on the other side of the Oronto. And that was done. The power company came in, did a temporary fix for the electric down there, and they have since now come down and drilled underground for the electric to go over to that area. So it's not a lay on the ground temporary wire anymore. Now it's permanent.
In the past, Hines says she and her husband have kept the harbor lights open until November. Then they shut down for a month to clean and travel before opening back up for the holidays. But she says they didn't go anywhere this year. Business at the Harbor Lights is down at least 60%.
It's maybe 35% of our business is still business, but locals have been really, really wonderful. They have. They've supported us. There's been a lot of people coming down to see it, and because of that, you say the same thing over and over and over again, because they want to know, and they care what happened and were you here and how did, you know, all this kind of thing. So it's amazing the amount of people that come down here to do all of the different things. They're not just the boat owners down there or the campers. They're just a little bit of everything, and they legitimately care and feel, you know, a big loss because of it. I hope that we will be seeing something move toward what's going to happen. It hasn't been moving very much at all.
When you say it feels like a big loss, how would you describe that?
It's not our loss. I mean, this is the happy place for so many hundreds of people, a lot more than folks really realize. So it's a loss to them. Certainly it's a loss to us. It's an investment that we made a good many years ago and have been holding on because they liked it. It's a wonderful place to be. It really was. It's not just a job. If it were a job, we wouldn't have stayed this long. But we met so many, 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 many wonderful people, and all the excitement of people coming in off the lake or coming down to fish, and you know, if you can help, you do, and if you know, there were just all kinds of situations that just endeared us to the whole place. Really, really liked it. But yeah, it's a big loss now, monetarily to us, and I expect that the folks up at the Driftwood, which is only what, a quarter of a mile from us, you know, because they depend on the traffic too. And like I said, this has been the happy place for an awful lot of people, and it's not here. So
how are you managing in the meantime?
Well, you kind of do things differently. You try to somehow, you know, stay with some semblance of what we had. But reality tells you we're missing 90 boats. We're missing 35 campers. You can't, in your wildest imagination, think that the level of income is going to be there, because it's not, absolutely not. And it's not going to be for a couple of years by the sounds of what they're tossing around, you know. So we do what we can do.
But you're planning to stick it out for the next few years?
Well, yes and no. Yeah, we're not going to just walk away from it, that's for certain. And there are interests in the place. It's going to depend on what you got to figure. When you have the amount of investment that's going to be right in front of us and upgrade, you know, we might as well sit and wait and watch, because I don't know. I guess we just want to.
Well, I mean, if you've been here for, what is it, 40 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else would you do if you weren't here?
Oh, well, that's the... I don't really think we'd have a problem with that. But I don't want to yet. I really don't. I know that it's time. I know that. And if this had not happened, we probably would have sold it within the past 2 years. But when this happened, it just makes you want to, you know, look back and think, what, you know, what would the next person want to do with this thing? What would, and I don't know what they'd do. I think they'd probably, it's not going to be a mom and pop restaurant bar type thing. I'm sure of that. I don't know. But I know that we will probably, we have been discussing it between Bill and me, but we will probably, if we can, just wait until the plans at least come out, so that you can be assured that they are actually going to do something with it. Regardless of what they do, the place has got such a beautiful view of the lake. You know, I mean, it's beautiful. It's just, and I guess I'll forever love that. But I don't know. You make your decisions as you have to.
You said people are always asking you to tell the story when you come down. You know, I mean, is that the tourism now, or is that your business? Is it just people who want to see the destruction that it caused?
I think that if for people that have never been here before, it's hard for them to visualize. We do have some pictures of of the harbor, that what it looked like, so that you can show them this is the damage, you know. And there's an awful lot of people that are coming back now for the summer, or during the summer, that saw it when it first happened, or haven't seen it since then. And that's why you got to keep you telling the same thing, or, you know, about the amount of rain and the area that it all came from and how it did the damage and stuff like that. Yeah.
How does that make you feel? I mean, I would imagine that would be very difficult to relive one of the worst days.
It is. It's hard. I don't know. I guess you get to the point where these people are legitimately interested. They can see, you know, what a horrible thing it was to have happened. And you can tell it, and I can now tell it without getting, you know, terribly, you know, involved in the story over and over. But it's almost like a speech now. You know, like you're, but they care. You know, and that's the only reason. Otherwise, you'd make it a pretty short thing. But they do care.
So what do you want to see for the future of Saxon Harbor, then?
I want them to understand what this place actually means to so many, many people, and why. It's very easy for some people to say, well, it's just a little recreation thing, but so many of the people down here that have boats in here, they don't have hunting camps, they don't have cottages somewhere. This is their fun time. That's what their investment is. And so people that feel, well, you know, it's a bunch of well-to-dos out there, that's not true either. It's affecting so many people adversely than they even think it would. You got two bars. You have the driftwood and the harbor lights. But the folks from the frontier up there come down, you know, on there. So all of that, and I, to tell you the truth, didn't see a whole lot of caring about that from the powers that be. It really wasn't. I mean, we've got charter fishermen out there. They've got a pretty good investment in their stuff. And they have all of their licenses, their boats, their equipment, their advertisement, on and on and on with the investment they have for a very short season. I don't know that anybody ever asked them, you know, what's going on, or how can anybody, what can we do to assist any of that? And they certainly didn't, the rest of us business people. You know, it's, they've got their thing, and I don't mean that they should be knocking on our door expecting too much from us, but it's just, you know, they're far enough away, talking about the government that, you know what, it seems to me, all the funding is in place. FEMA came through. The Corps of Engineers got their money to do the dredging and work on their part of the structure inside. Wisconsin Coastal Lands got their funding for the docks and, I mean, for the launch ramps and all this kind of, that's all in place. And Governor Walker came through with the portion to help Iron County pay their portion of what has to go in with FEMA. And so all of that is there. Now we sit with, there. I think there was another delay on when these people had to have a decision made on certain things. And I think there isn't anything that can be done until they decide what they're going to do with the Oronto. You know, are they going to bridge it one way or bridge it the other way? And until that stuff is settled, you certainly can't dredge because everything's still moving around in there.
Hines says the pace of the recovery process at Saxon Harbor has been frustrating at times.
That is what we're getting the questions on as people come in now. It's been a year. Why does it still look like that? Is there, do they have the plans in place? And is something going to be, you know, and I said, well, it'll happen when it can happen. And there isn't a whole lot we can do to hurry it up. I know that there's a great deal of people that are writing to their both federal and state representatives to ask if there isn't something that they can do to get somewhat of a sense of urgency here, because there obviously isn't.
What have you been told about why the bridge isn't in place yet?
Well, the last thing we heard was that because they now have a bridge over the Oronto and connecting those people down there, now there isn't a real problem. So now we have somewhat slipped down in the urgency order. Now we're not quite as necessary as it was, which is kind of, that is the decision that's holding up so much of the rest of it. I don't know, because we are not told much either, you know. I mean, you can go to some meetings, and we do, but I don't know. It's just, I guess we just sit on the sidelines and hope someone or they are working on everybody's best interests. And maybe they are, and maybe, it gets kind of negative after a year. Now people are starting to snarl a little about, and I'm not just talking about boat owners. I'm talking about Saxon Harbor users. They want to get back down to the beach, and they want to come and help. They would come down and help clean up anything that they can, but we're not allowed to do that. The boating club wanted to get more involved with the pickup and the cleanup. Couldn't do that either, so it's frustrating, I suppose I'd have to say. Nobody thought it was going to be overnight. That's not true. Not at all. But it's a year next week. And there isn't anything that they've told us that is a progressive move.
So do you want to see it be the kind of campsite and marina or boat slip that it once was?
Close. Yeah. If they can't use the area that the campground was in, then no, of course it's not going to be the same. But there are other areas that they apparently are looking at.
Anything that I'm missing that you want to add about what's happening down here at Saxon Harbor?
I want to get through July with no rains. July is our rainiest month, absolutely by far. Every heavy rain event we've had has been in July, hard to believe. But it's also the month that the lake is relatively calm, so people do a lot of their traveling on boats. Yeah. August is kind of but as a whole, I want to get through July and know that nothing more is going to happen down there to make it harder and harder for it to be fixed, because it just goes on.
Again, you've been listening to Grace Hines, co-owner of the Harbor Lights Bar and Restaurant at Saxon Harbor. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. And you can find all of our stories about how the flood has impacted northern Wisconsin online at wpr.org. You can check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/KUWSFM. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.